I'm going round with my student here, who's now the architect.
I know, this, it's a wonderful connection, isn't it?
Very good.
Janie's helped recreate this.
I've been talking to her about it. I mean, I think it's wonderful that it's here. Last time I was here, it was all derelict.
Jane was my tutor when I studied building conservation. And Jane ran the course at the Architectural Association in London and also was a specialist in historic flooring.
Well, I had no idea Janie was working here until I ran into her.
Yes.
And then unmistakably there she was. Yes. And then I discovered she'd been working here.
For 4 years, yes. And I'd seen your name on the list.
Well,
I'd made efforts to try to get your contact details so I could contact you.
I think it's an absolutely brilliant link that you wouldn't have known when studying.
No.
But you would end up here.
Not at all.
Well, I didn't teach my students about bletchery, of course.
No.
Why should I?
I imagine at that time you couldn't still, could you?
No, I wasn't allowed to. It's perfectly right.
Can you tell us some more about the holes you were saying about between the huts there were the holes?
Our communication with hut 6 and hut 3 was through a little hole in the wall, which you know all about, I'm sure. But apparently it isn't there anymore because Janie
couldn't find it. We could find it on one hut and we couldn't find the corresponding hole on the other hut, so I was quite keen to recreate it. But actually then I realised that we didn't have any information about the physicality of what it looked like, so we didn't have enough information to recreate it anyway.
I see.
So I'd love to sit down and sketch it and see if
we can get to the bottom of what it should look like. As I say, in hut 3, the translators were all in a circle, round, a supporting... I suppose now I come to think of it, it was probably a chimney, really, that supported some frightfully worn-out old stove. But anyway, there was something which held this circular structure up. Uh-huh. And they had their chairs round it, because they wanted to be able to pass the papers from one to the other. And at one side of it, there was a big hole, about table level. I mean, the bottom of it was about table level. And on it was a basket, held up with some old bits of string, kind of thing. It was very, very ad hoc. And all these vitally important messages going to people like Churchill got into this little basket.
So was it like a wire basket or a cane basket?
As far as I remember, it was one of those little wire baskets.
Yeah.
You know, usual army issue. And I used to just shout through it, and I knew all the translators, of course, and I used to say, I've got something for you, Gordon, and then Gordon would appear the other side of it and he'd pull the thing through, and then I knew it was in good hands, and vice versa. You heard a voice saying Jane, and you ran along, and there was something very exciting coming through the other way. So it was all on a very personal level.
And would you have had any interaction from one room to another, from the people working
in other
rooms?
Oh, yes, we were always running up and down, of course. Uh-huh. But the people who were rather didn't want to be disturbed were the code breakers, because they were the deep thinkers.
And did they have one particular allocated place in the hut?
Yes, they did, and it was right up in hut 6, at the far end on the right.
Uh-huh.
Well, it seems extraordinary when you look at these funny old things, which is us, that we actually did it, doesn't it?
Well, all of you were one tiny cog in a massive machine.
That's exactly
Everyone
right.
Everyone here, so many of you that I speak to say, oh, I did nothing important here. Mm. No, every single person who was here was part of that machine, and without all of you, we wouldn't be here now.
And they were all working incredibly hard. I mean, we regularly worked 12-hour shifts, which isn't very hard for an architect, but...
I was doing that yesterday.
By today's standards, I would say we were workaholics. And then we had to get back to our digs in the dark. Everything was blacked out. I was said to be carrying a hammer in my pocket, but actually it was a torch. But you could have been. I was all on my own. Could have been accosted easily.
Would there have been any site lighting here?
No, I don't think any. I mean, it's a total miracle. Why, nobody tried to get in. Nobody knew we were here. How could they not have known? I mean, we had this huge number of motor bicycles, for example, coming in and out all the time. All the radio stuff, of course, we managed to get through without anybody intercepting it. How did we do it? By modern methods, it must have been quite easy to find out there was some sort of thing going on at Bletchley, wasn't it?
Just people knew to keep quiet, didn't they?
I just simply don't understand how it...
Hush, hush.
Well, you've put the labels back, haven't you, saying don't speak or whatever they say?
Yes.
I remember those. I mean, there was a sort of general accent saying people shouldn't talk. What I did say to that sweet duchess, who I thought was so good at her job and so charming, and I said, well, don't forget that we were lucky enough to be here at the right time, in the right place, we were able to do what we did because of that. It may be the most important thing that any of us ever done in our lives.
Absolutely.
We didn't realise it at the time, but we do now.
Well, it's been absolutely wonderful to meet you, and thank you for your service.
That's all right. I always enjoy talking.